city street. He claims only in this case that his title to the insured land, that is lot 7 and the east 25 feet of lot 6, is defective because of the hotel's encroachment onto city property.
How do you determine the question of whether or not it's marketable? I mean, you're saying that unmarketable, and your opposing counsel seems to say, well, no, it's marketable. You just have this, quote, encroachment, which would probably lower the price.
The fact that the encroachment exposes the buyer, in this case the owner, to litigation is in of itself sufficient to render it unmarketable. Okay. And I don't think the cases talk about unmarketability in an absolute sense.
Couldn't you, can't this be repaired, rectified? In other words, it's a parcel that's 15 feet by 132 feet, and what if you moved it over? I assume it would cost money, but it would still be, you'd still have underground parking, you just wouldn't have as much, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. We could close the 15-foot by 132-foot section. It is impossible to move it because, as the Court knows from the record, this already extends beyond the limit of the land owned by the hotel.
Yes.
At that corner.
Yeah, it's in the right of way of the.
That's right. So there really is no opportunity to move it. There is an opportunity to close it. We didn't get that far in the case because the courts below did not allow us to proceed beyond the point whether this constitutes an encumbrance or not.
And can you sue the contractor who built it, or can you sue the people who sold it to you? I mean, if it's not marketable and merchantable, that may be a defect in the warranty deed, right?
Very true, Your Honor. And that's how the estate of Meehan case arose. It was a lawsuit against the person who conveyed the property.
But in your case, I'm assuming the statute of limitations is run against these people, but not necessarily on the warranty deed.
Not necessarily on the warranty deed, Your Honor. And call us optimistic or gamblers, but we thought it would be a good idea to make a first-party claim against our own insurance company rather than involve Mr. Dahlman in litigation against the adverse party with whom he had a perfectly civil and mutually agreeable experience. If there are subrogation rights that the title company would inure to after paying our claim and wish to go after the seller, that would certainly be their business. We have, we believe, a perfectly valid first-party claim covered by this insurance policy.
Could I ask you, from the point of view of the title insurance company, what should they have done, in your view, to uncover this problem or protect themselves from this potential liability?
Your Honor, in title insurance practice, there are certain standard exceptions to title coverage that are universally used and often always appear in the commitment for title insurance. One of those exceptions, proposed and usually accepted, is an exception for encumbrances, such as by this encroaching garage. Another way that title insurance companies protect themselves is that they will insert an exception for defects or facts which could be uncovered by an accurate survey. Both of those exceptions were included in the title commitment issued to Mr. Dahlman. And through negotiations at the closing with First American, those two protections for the title insurance company were deleted.
Weren't they deleted at the request of Mr. Dahlman's then-attorney?
Correct, Your Honor. With the idea that he would now have, Mr. Dahlman would now have, extended coverage. That is, extended assurances for coverage that go beyond, that go into off-record defects. And these are just exactly those kinds of defects that the title insurance company accepted the risk of when they deleted those exceptions.
Did the insured pay for that extended coverage?
The insurance company, Mr. Dahlman paid some $4,000 for the title insurance premium. I think your question, Your Honor, goes to whether he paid an additional amount for that, for those deletions. I don't think he did. If there was consideration, it was not additional premium. It was for continuing the deal with this title insurance company to proceed with the closing.
As I understand the marketability argument, there must be a substantial encroachment for it, for you to prevail on marketability. It seems to me that the fee involved here, around $4,000, in the scheme of things, isn't that great. How can, if that's true, and you will probably disagree with that, but how can you pass the test for substantial encroachment given the what I see as a rather nominal fee, relatively speaking?
Relatively speaking, I think you're right. The purchase price for this hotel was some $4 million, and maybe $4,000 a year isn't so bad. I should point out that the fee is subject to increase, I won't say at the whim of the city, but they dictate how much it will be, so it could be more. But the test for substantiality of an encroachment is a four-factor test set forth in the Meehan case. And it involves I can tell you exactly, it involves the character and extent of the encroachment, not the cost, but the encroachment itself being a concrete structure of 15 feet by 132 feet, the cost or possibility of its removal, which has not been determined yet because of the status of the case being dismissed before we got into those evaluations. The third factor is the length of time that the encroachment continued, and that was a substantial amount of time. I think everyone would agree that since 1960, that's, at least in Madison, that's a good long time for a building to be in place. And then the fourth factor is municipal acquiescence, interestingly. And that's what the city of Madison did to us, if you will, from 1960 until 2002. They let Mr. Dahlman, or let the owner of the hotel, use this space.
Well, they didn't know, did they? No one knew about this. Allegedly, no one knew about it.
The city claims to have not known about it and discovered it during sidewalk repairs in about 2002. And Your Honor, frankly, I think it is if not entirely stipulated, the surrounding facts are stipulated that no one did know about this. The seller, when he sold to Ms. Justice Bradley, to answer your question, those are the four factors, and the four factors set forth in the Meehan case for substantiality really do not address the annual fee. That's the cheapest of our options, is to pay that. But if we were to remove the structure, it would be substantially more than that, although I'm not at liberty to tell you because we don't know yet. Yeah. So it is my impression that the Court of Appeals ignored the case law that is already in place in the Meehan case and the Douglas case that would give rise to this claim that Mr. Dahlman has against his own insurance company, because the Court of Appeals said that your encroachment onto the neighbor's land cannot affect the marketability of your own insured land. And I think that's where the error lies in the Court of Appeals decision as well as the court below. The intention of the parties is quite important in this case, especially when we're considering extended coverage. That is, two knowledgeable people engaged in a commercial enterprise, supposedly knowing what they're doing, negotiated to have these two exceptions, which would have protected the insurance company, taken away so that the risk of those defects or those possible off-record defects would be shifted to the other party. Do we get into the intention of the parties? I think we certainly do because of the concept of extended coverage. We have to know what that means. Ordinarily, the contract of insurance has to be treated in a title insurance case just like any other contract or contract of insurance. The court is to determine the intention of the parties. And we think this evidence of what took place at the closing and in negotiations shows exactly what they intended. And now that the defect has been discovered, previously unknown or unappreciated, the title insurance company does not want to own up to its acceptance of this risk. If the Court has no further questions at this time, I would be pleased to take my seat and reserve my time.
I'm just musing about the fact that if you're asking, first of all, the city isn't here. They want, and repairing this is not practical. So basically, you're asking for the title company to pay for the $3,900 a year that has been paid, and then to be responsible for that in the future, or for whatever the city does. Is that correct?
That's one possible measure of damages, Your Honor. Another possibility is that we've determined what the difference in value is of the building with and without this defect in the title and seek compensation on that basis. But we didn't get to the question of measure of damages yet in this case. Be glad to speculate with you.
I thought that the measure is it's quite measurable because you know what it is, and the only thing you don't know whether the city would change its mind and or want some. There might be construction on Francis Street, which would make the parking garage a impediment on that.
That is true, Your Honor, and that's one of the possibilities that we would like to be given the opportunity to explore if this case is remanded.
Let's suppose that the survey had shown that the building part thereof was encroaching. What would happen then?
My client testified in his deposition that Mr. Dahlman's agent, Mr. Zarnowitz, testified that he would not have had such any survey done as long as the survey presented to the title insurance company was acceptable to the title insurance company and the lending bank. I think the point of your question is, what if such a survey had been done?
An accurate survey,
right. And it showed that there was this extension going under the city street. I must say that there's a possibility that Mr. Dahlman would not have closed that day until this discrepancy was closed.
As interested in Mr. Dahlman as I am in what the title company, and I'm going to ask that question to the title company.
We would have asked the same question at the closing, Your Honor, to the title company.
Because
what are we going to do about
this? The exception was marked off.
Right.
Anything that the survey would show was marked off.
Correct.
Now, the title company's position is that they don't cover other land. They only cover this land. So if their position is that they only cover this land, if the survey showed an encroachment, why would it make any difference if they continued to the copy, if they continued to ensure the title as they did? Do you know?
Are you asking if the title company did have an accurate survey, it showed the...
Right, and they closed on the title policy as is, and I'm going to ask that of the title insurance company, too.
And there was a survey that they had already deleted their title, their survey exception. They would have to cover this, Your Honor, in the same...
That's your view.
That's my view,
right.
In the same manner in which we're asking the court to address that issue now. Mm-hmm. And exactly what that coverage would mean, we don't know. We know the title policy is a policy of indemnity, and we would expect to be indemnified to the extent allowed.
There also seemed to be some discrepancy in the briefs, and I have not read the record, whether a survey would show that part of the structure that was below the surface of the earth. What's your view on that?
We believe that in the record, the evidence is undisputed in that Mr. Dahlman hired a surveyor named Frank Thousand, who has given an affidavit and a deposition stating that that in many cases he has been asked to determine the limits of a property, including underground unseen structures. And that
he do it if he's not asked to do the underground?
If he's only asked to survey the surface, that's what he'll do. If he's asked to do to locate underground items. He will do that. And he will, I hope I'm not misstating the record, but this building has an external appearance. It has the entrance to the parking garage leading down a ramp and going underground.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that would give notice to a surveyor who wants to do an accurate survey that there's the possibility that the underground structure will not completely conform with what you see above the ground.
Is that driveway, is that all on your client's land?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so it's only the parking underneath the ground.
That's right, Your Honor.
Justice Brassett, did you have a question?
The first question I'd ask is the underground parking garage, would it be your theory that the contractor just goofed up?
It gets more interesting than that, Your Honor. The contractor got a building permit from the city of Madison presenting plans back in 1960 that showed the encroachment, that the underground structure would be built under the city sidewalk. And the city approved the building permit. And that's the way it was built and allowed to exist for 40 years.
And how can they change their position?
They decided to, the city of Madison decided to enforce this privilege agreement ordinance it has and saw, I presume, a source of income and, in effect, started taxing us for using that area under their sidewalk.
My real question is, you're operating under a standard title insurance policy form, I believe. If you prevail, what effect is this going to have on the issuance of title insurance throughout the state and throughout the nation? I mean, what kind of economic impacts is it going to have?
I can't say around the nation, Your Honor, because having researched this, I see different states take different approaches. But for this particular case, I think this is a good case in point. The title insurance company may not accept a survey from the seller, which took place in this case. They may insist on a survey or at least not delete their survey exception. I don't think it'll have any economic impact, but it may make it more difficult to persuade the insurance company to delete these standard exceptions, as you point out, which show up in every title commitment.
Is the title insurance company entitled to claim they were deceived in some way by the survey?
I don't know whether that's their claim or not, Your Honor, because if they were deceived, so is Mr. Dahlman, because he merely passed on the survey that had been presented to him by the previous owner. And frankly, it's questionable whether the previous owner realized what it is, either because the offer to purchase talks about conveying the Madison Inn, 601 Langdon Street, and then proceeds to give the same legal description which appears in the title policy. So nothing about this encroachment is mentioned by the seller at any time.
But you just stated that it was known and that there were plans that allowed for it.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Had the my question would be, had the inn passed hands more, wasn't the original owner then, or was it?
Mr. Dahlman?
No, Mr. Dahlman's predecessor.
I would actually have to defer to opposing counsel on that. I can't say whether Mr. Velhoff was the person who developed the hotel in the first place or not.
Because it was known, you just stated it was known at that time by the city and obviously by the builder.
That's right, Your Honor.
Or the perhaps by the owner.
Yeah. And the fact of the existence of these plans and building permit did not come up either until after this dispute with the city came up. Our firm looked into it after the city demanded this agreement, and that's when it was discovered in the city's files.
But some of this discussion sounds like equitable estoppel sort of discussion, and yet the city's not a party here, and that isn't
I'm not sure how that plays with regard to the title insurance company.
At the risk of maybe getting outside the record that has been presented to you and yet answering your question, events have continued to happen since 2002 and 2003 when this action began. Tell me to stop if the court does not wish to know. But
I think so, because there was in the briefing there was discussion about going outside the record, so I think we'll
That's
stop
right.
and not
so
outside.
I can only say that the risk of litigation was real when we started this action, and I have no reason to change my mind at this date.
Thank you.
Without further questions, Your Honor, I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you have several moments in rebuttal. Mr. Nielsen, you are 30 minutes representing First American Title Insurance Company.
May it please the Court, my name is Bush Nielsen. I go by Bush rather than John. It's a long story. I do represent First American Title Insurance Company. This case really involves a very narrow issue. It's about the coverage of a title insurance policy that was issued by my client, First American. The sole issue is whether or not that policy requires First American to pay the annual fee that the City of Madison requires that Mr. Dahlman pay to keep a structure in the street which the city owns, and to continue to make that payment this year, next year, the year after that, and forever. But the very narrow question is whether or not the title insurance policy obligates the insurer to make that payment. What Mr. Dahlman seeks to do in his briefing, particularly before this court, is to broaden the issue that would be before this court to talk about encumbrances on title and marketability of title. First American believes that this court, in order to broaden the definitions of encumbrance and marketability enough so that you could make a covered claim under a title policy for an encumbrance that isn't even on the insured land, if you broaden the definitions enough to make an encumbrance and to make title unmarketable because of that encumbrance, you're going to affect a lot of property in this state. You will, in particular, affect every single property in the City of Madison and every other municipality in this state in which there is an ordinance that requires a privilege agreement, a license, an easement, or some such arrangement with the private owner in order to maintain any kind of structure in a public right-of-way, alley, sidewalk, whatever. And if Mr. Dahlman's premise were accepted by this court, what renders the title unmarketable and creates an encumbrance is not just the fact that the municipality passes an ordinance and says that we agree to allow you to keep your structure in our street, which is, after all, the city's own street, but simply that Mr. Dahlman must make a payment. As Justice Bradley said, a nominal payment. As counsel admitted, a nominal payment in relation to the value of the property itself, $4,000.
Counselor, you say that there's an attempt to broaden the definition of encumbrance, but as I read the Meehan case, it says that an encroachment is defined as going on to another's property as well as the property owner at issue, so it would fit here. And it says that when an encroachment becomes substantial, then it's an encumbrance. I'm not understanding how opposing counsel is broadening beyond the Meehan case, and maybe you could explain that to me.
Your Honor, I would not say that, for example, that Meehan is wrong or that it should be interpreted more narrowly than the court intended it in Meehan. Counsel seeks to broaden Meehan, first, in two respects. First, to apply Meehan directly into the coverage of a title insurance policy, as if it was a ruling on the coverage of that policy. And I'll come back to that in a minute. But secondly, counsel wishes to take the substantiality test set by Meehan, which I think, frankly, is a kind of a bad word, although I continue to use it in our briefs, and say that substantial is not defined as even size, but really is defined as whether or not the owner of the private property who encroaches into a public street has to pay anything. has to pay any consideration at all in order to maintain his for-profit enterprise in the public's property. The four factors, as counsel read them, are the character or extent of the encroachment, the cost or possibility of its removal, the length of time that the encroachment has continued, and whether or not the municipality has acquiesced. Mahan Court cited perhaps the most learned treatise on this subject, Patent on Titles. I looked at Patent and Palomar on Titles, third edition. It has a slightly different statement of these same issues. It says, under the same section 676 cited by the court in Mahan, an encumbrance also exists when the buildings or other structures on a vendor's, that is, seller's land, encroach upon land of adjoining owners without the sanction of an appurtenant easement. The city has offered what is effectively an easement. The city is precluded from actually granting easements. The city, however, has offered a privilege agreement, which looks a lot like an easement or a lease. So what Patton and Palomar now says, that there's an encumbrance if your encroachment goes onto someone else's land without the sanction of an appurtenant easement.
But at this moment, they don't have an easement, correct? There's an offer of a privilege, which, if I buy your argument, is similar to an easement, but it isn't an offer without compensation. And where does that put the title company then?
I would rephrase your question just slightly, Your Honor. The question is where it puts all buyers and sellers of real estate in this state. Because of the test of substantiality, that is, what is an encumbrance, is whether or not any money has to be paid. That every single structure in the city of Madison and many other cities that encroaches into the street with permission for which any amount of consideration is paid is an encumbrance which renders title unmarketable, under Mr. Dolman's view of what an encumbrance is.
Well, there are two parts to the coverage, and I think what he was talking about is a defect or encumbrance on the title, item number two, and then the unmarketability is item number three. So I think he's making an argument under two different sections on the front page of your policy,
yes,
I understand it correctly. And I was really focusing more on the encumbrance because that's the language that comes out of Mahan.
Right.
Counsel, can I just follow up on that? Because it's now known that the city had granted the privilege, although your opposing counsel indicated that that was not part of the negotiations at the time of the sale. Would you consider this an encumbrance if there was no payment made? In other words, for 40 years, roughly, there was no payment, so it didn't make any difference.
Correct, Your Honor. And that would be strong evidence, in my opinion, of the Mahan factors that show that this is not an encumbrance because there's been long acquiescence. I don't think that acquiescence by the city has changed in any respect by the passage of the ordinance which affected every property in the city.
Suppose this had been built last year. Developer builds it, same facts. Now the developer sells it, warranty deed, to Mr. Dolman. Is this an encumbrance?
Your Honor, I would say that it is not. The city would require that a privilege agreement be executed and that some payment be made. If the title to the land that is actually owned by Mr. Dolman is unmarketable or has an encumbrance on it simply because he elects to build some part of a structure in the street with the permission of the city and the payment of a fee, what he's saying is that a future buyer of his property can reject the title as being unmarketable, and that marketability problem cannot be cured because no right greater than what the city has already offered can ever be obtained.
What does marketable title mean? We've shifted from encumbrance to marketable title. Yes. What does marketable title mean?
Marketable title is that title which is reasonably free of doubt and which does not subject the purchaser to the probability of litigation in order to establish what title
that's
is owned.
That's a Douglas case or whatever.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, this subjects them to litigation. You don't pay the city, they're going to sue. If they haven't sued yet, they will. They can sue a municipal court. Go ahead.
They can, Your Honor. Yes, they can. Because There is a structure that is in the city's right-of-way.
There's a goof here. There's a goof. This is a goof. Building on somebody else's land is a goof.
Your Honor, this is a fairly large structure which would have required the tearing up of the street to build. I don't know the history, but it seems incomprehensible to me that this parking structure could have been built like the Great Escape in the middle of the night, people carrying out little bits of dirt in their pockets.
Well, might have been a good idea. They would have had trouble as to where to put it. But here's the problem. If that's all true, why didn't you bring in the city in this case? Because from what I hear you telling me, hey, the city knew, the city waived, you know, it's hard to get the city stopped, you don't have adverse possession against the city, et cetera. So why don't you bring them in and then say to them, hey, you can't charge because you knew you approved so long, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It would have been possible for First American, I believe, to sue the city. The First American is not the owner of the property.
I understand that, but you got a lawsuit going.
There is a lawsuit that First American brought in order to have the court declare whether or not this was covered.
Sure. This is an insurance policy lawsuit.
Yes, yes, it is.
Could have brought in everybody, settled out everything. Might have been to your interest.
Your Honor, this was just a declaratory judgment action. We didn't think it appropriate to either sue the seller, with whom we have no privity of contract,
right,
or the city.
Okay. I got it. So your position then is if the structure, which could be quite new, encroaches on somebody else's land, then the title insurance company is not liable when the survey doesn't show it.
That's not exactly my position.
Okay, what's your position?
My position is simpler than that.
Okay.
The title insurance policy does not insure the title to any property beyond the bounds of the land that's described in Schedule A.
Okay, that's good. Now, what does your survey exception mean?
The survey exception, Your Honor, does remove from coverage certain risks that the insured has or the insurer would have based on other people's rights in the insured land. There's a good example in Mr. Dorman's policy. The survey that was provided to First American showed that the wall, the wall on the surface of the parking garage encroached into an easement holder's right-of-way. The survey showed that. The title insurer discovered that there was an easement that the wall encroached on. It showed an exception, which you'll find in
it's in the Respondent's Appendix 1.
The policy is, you'll find this on what's called Schedule B of the policy.
Mm-hmm.
Schedule B of the policy makes an exception at number 5, encroachment of exterior wall or parking garage and vent into the 4-foot right-of-way. Mm-hmm. Then Mr. Dolman, once he had identified the risk of the encroachment, after the survey had shown it to both Mr. Dolman and First American, he asked for affirmative protection against the removal of his wall if the easement holder, who took its easement in 1901, asked to have the wall removed. The title insurer gave a carefully crafted endorsement that would protect Mr. Dolman if the easement holder made Mr. Dolman remove his wall. Mr. Dolman paid money for that endorsement. The title insurer understood that it was accepting a risk. The removal of the survey exception protects the insured against other people's claims inside the property. The most common example, as in the case of the Glynn case that we cited from New York, is someone else's claim of adverse possession on the insured property. The Northwest Building case from Washington and other cases that we cited made it very clear that what the removal of the exception does not do is increase the amount of land that's actually been insured. Simple as that.
So if you had gotten a survey here, which is the question I asked your opposing counsel, you had a survey, and it showed that the parking lot encroached on the city street. What would you have done?
There is uncontested testimony from an expert witness named Dwayne Wunsch which appears at number 7 of the respondent's appendix, he says exactly what the title insurer would have done. If there was an encroachment into the street shown by the survey, the title insurer would have asked Mr. Dahlman or his seller if they had a privilege agreement. And if they had shown a privilege agreement to the title insurer, the insurer would have been willing, on payment of a premium, to issue an endorsement assuring the rights that were created by the privilege agreement.
Well, so why would you do that? If the position is that you're only insuring the land, you're not insuring anything outside the land, your survey just removes issues on that land, then it seems to me you should have just said, too bad about the parking structure. It's not under our policy at all. We don't have to do anything. Because that's your position now.
It is, sir.
Your position now is exactly that. So even if you're, and you don't have to do it because you're in the four corners of the land. So that seems to me to have, should have been your position as a title insurance issue. Even if you knew about it before.
It would be, Your Honor. In this case, in this exact situation, if the encroachment had been shown and there was no privilege agreement, there would have been no insurance given as to the encroaching structure.
It seems to me you could have, if your position is theoretically sound, you could have closed your eyes and said, hey, Mr. Dahlman has a lawyer. That's the lawyer's obligation. Our title policy only covers the land. That's all we're insuring. If we come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we're going to win because it only covers the land. So it's up to them if they want to fuss about the fact that their structure encroaches someone else's land. I mean, I think that's what I'm pushing you to say.
That is exactly what I am saying, Your Honor.
Okay.
If Mr. Dahlman's lawyer had asked First American to insure a right in the street, First American would have asked Mr. Dahlman's lawyer to prove that he had a right to be in the street, and only if he could prove that would they have insured any right beyond the land described.
But your witness said once they saw that survey with the parking structure, they would have raised this as a problem. That's a little different than saying we're not concerned as a title insurance company at all, which is your position here.
I don't recall the witness saying that, Your Honor,
okay.
To be honest.
Let me ask, suppose you were insuring property next to a hotel with an underground parking facility, and the underground parking facility came under the property that you're insuring, and you have all your exclusions, and you didn't know, what would be the effect then? When the encroachment is discovered, is your insured going to be able to make a claim against the company?
That is a question, Your Honor, that I'm not sure has ever been answered by any court in this country. But I think it's an excellent question. I'm not sure that I've ever pondered it myself. If the neighbor asserted the right to be on the property, to encroach onto the property, and actually brought a lawsuit to that effect, claiming his rights in the property, I believe that the policy, if it removed the survey exception, so that, in other words, it protected against any defect, lien, encumbrance, or adverse claim against title, I think it would cover against the neighbor's claim inside the boundary line, even though that matter was subterranean. The closest case that I can think of was a case out of Connecticut in which what's called a stoop or step foundation was underneath the property and was found to encroach a neighboring property.
Now, I want to ask a loaded question. Opposing counsel, I believe, quoted you.
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
What's your rebuttal to that?
Your Honor, I quoted myself back, and I should find... I just believe that not everything that I had said had actually been, let me just find it. I quoted myself back at page 7 of the respondent's brief. Let me read the pertinent part. The question, again, is what is actually insured by the policy? What is the limit of the land that is being insured? I wrote, the policy may be read to insure the ownership of the building that encroaches onto neighboring land if the building is identified in the description of land on Schedule A. In other words, Lot 7 of Sunny Heights subdivision together with the building located thereon, which is 42 stories high. This is very common in New York City, for example, to do that. I go on to say an encroachment may also be considered part of the insured land if the policy contains a specific affirmative assurance that improvements are located as shown on this survey. However, when no such affirmative coverage is given, the policy does not insure title to the encroaching improvements. For what it's worth, that was my thought on the subject.
Counselor, if I understand your argument, then you say that you are only insuring the legally described lot, because this is part of a plat of the original subdivision of Madison. And if anything falls outside that legal description of the lot, like this wall where you gave an additional assurance on Schedule B, it has to be listed that outside of the four squares of the lot, we're also going to take on this responsibility. So if it's outside the four squares, it fits only if there's a rider that covers it. Is that accurate?
That's exactly it, Your Honor. And just to clarify one thing, the wall that is shown on that survey is inside the boundary of the property. But it's on an area that is burdened by an easement.
By an easement. Okay,
right.
Gotcha. Thank you. Shown on the survey? Question mark?
Yes, yeah. It is, Your Honor.
So the kicker in your answer to Justice Cross's question was you'd be liable if you had received a survey. The survey might have been inaccurate, but if you struck that exception, you'd be liable.
The title insurance company would be liable, and perhaps it was you, Your Honor, who asked, could the title insurer go after a surveyor for basically
right.
Deceit?
And then you could.
Is the title insurer liable? If it removes the exceptions, yes. The cover of the policy.
But in answer to Justice Prosser, if there was an encroachment on the land you were insuring and there was no survey and the survey exception was not struck, you would not be liable.
If it was not struck, I would say yes. Well, actually that, Your Honor, I think raises, not to put too fine a point on it, but I tend to because this, I guess, is my subject. If the survey exception is not removed.
Right, and you don't have a survey.
Okay, but also it's a subterranean encroachment.
Right.
Which may not be shown on an accurate survey. The exception may not be broad enough to remove coverage. So, in other words, there may be coverage for the subterranean encroachment even with the survey exception in the policy, but only as to those encroachments that come into the insured property.
So what's the point of having a survey or a survey exception?
The survey exception, Your Honor, as many courts have said, is inserted by title insurers because this is a risk avoidance, not a risk assumption industry.
Okay.
They search the public records, though. They do not go out and inspect property. They don't know what it looks like. They've never seen it.
And there may be no building on the property for all they know.
Exactly. Or the building could be, I have paid many claims in which someone else's building was halfway onto the insured property. And the whole problem is that diminishes the value of the insured property. You just don't know. Title insurers don't inspect the land. Purchasers of property are expected to inspect the land. The title insurer inserts this exception and other exceptions like it as to all matters that would be basically visible and binding on a purchaser for value who has actual notice, but which you don't discover through the public records. Then they selectively remove these exceptions from coverage. as they are given some evidence of, for example, what a survey would show.
Does the title insurance amount cover only the land or the building and the land? So if I had raw land of $100,000 but a building on it with $300,000, so my total value is $400,000, how much title insurance are you going to sell me?
The title insurer will suggest that you insure both the land and the buildings, and the definition of land says that it does include structures.
Right.
And that's why it says that.
Mm-hmm. Counsel, I'm somewhat confused, well, maybe not confused, but it seems to me that your argument just now does request that we retract some language from Meehan. And I'm following up on Justice Rogenstein's question from earlier. But you talked about the encroachments onto the property, that the policy might cover that. Meehan, as I'm reading at the top of page 433, an encroachment occurs not only when a structure on an adjoining property encroaches substantially on your property without the benefit of a pertinent easement, but conversely, when a structure on your property encroaches on the adjoining property without the benefit of such an easement. A warranty against encumbrances extends to both types of an encroachment. Aren't you arguing that we should do something different here?
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
Clarify that for me.
I'm sorry?
Would you clarify that for me?
I would be happy to. There are two different subjects here today, and it is confusing. The subject of this case is a declaratory judgment action about the coverage of a title insurance policy.
Right.
Meehan was about what is an encumbrance on title. And this court, I think properly, and as with the majority of other high courts in other states, has said that an encroachment of a structure onto neighboring land can create an encumbrance on title. The policy does not insure any such encroaching structure. I would go on to say, however, that Meehan, I think, is pretty plain, that those structures that become encumbrances have to be those things for which there is no acquiescence, those things that have to be removed. Again, the Rakowski case that Mr. Dolman cites repeatedly, the only coverage case that assists Mr. Dolman, in my opinion, in that case, the neighbor sued to have a barn removed. The barn was on the insured's property. Okay, that's enforced removal as opposed to acquiescence.
Counsel, are you saying then if the city simply said, sorry, you can't keep this here, you have to remove it, that there would be coverage?
No. I do not want to confuse these two subjects.
No.
Let me just explain it one bit further. Because there is no title insurance coverage for the title to this structure in the street, the only way that Mr. Dolman can get to coverage is by saying that the fact that his structure goes into the street makes an encumbrance on the land that he actually owns, and then that encumbrance on his own title, caused by his own structure, makes his title unmarketable, thus coming around the back door of the policy. So even though the policy doesn't insure the structure, he now admits that he doesn't own any part of the street. He implicitly admits he doesn't even own the structure itself. He admits he has no right to have the structure in the street. He says, but in the back door, my own structure makes an encumbrance on my title. Encumbrances are covered. Therefore, even though you didn't insure the title, you've insured the title. The real test of the coverage that he claims, and why it is so far beyond the test of what the policy covers, is what he asked the title insurer to pay for. Unlike the forced removal coverage that he got as to the encroachment on the easement, he says that First American must go pay for his right to be in the street and pay for it for forever.
Well, or I think that he also said one measure of damages might be what was the value of the hotel with this problem with the city in the street as opposed to without it. So
counsel did say that today for the first time.
Well, but, you know, this is at a summary judgment stage, and I don't imagine damages were really put together very well for either side at the circuit court, were they?
It was not exactly a summary judgment, Your Honor. It was stipulated facts.
Yeah.
Counsel, Mr. Janicek, in response to my question regarding the payment of
around $4,000 a year, said that that played no part in the substantial, as I understood his answer, played no part in the substantial encroachment four-part test. Can you respond to that? Is he right? Is he incorrect?
There are several things about substantiality. First, I think that the fee that the city asked for is nominal. I mean, when you read the ordinance, it's clear that it is intended to be nominal. It is really just a matter of a license, which in any event, any license can be revoked whether there's consideration or not. This is a nominal fee. More importantly, what Mr. Dahlman suggests is the payment of any fee at all renders the acquiescence non-acquiescence. So if, you know, he would be happy. In other words, though, it's an interesting conundrum he creates, though. He says that if First American would pay the fee, that renders his title marketable. But if he has to pay the fee, his title is unmarketable. So that's so he creates this test of unmarketability, which is simply whether or not I have to pay a fee. That payment of a fee is not a factor in Meehan. He could be granted effectively an easement, as I just read from the learned treatise, if you have the right by an easement or a license to maintain your structure in the street, it's not an encumbrance. So, in other words, that's why I think he stretched me and went beyond where it should be.
Is the question of whether a title is marketable a question of fact or a question of law?
Your Honor, this Court has said repeatedly that it is a question of law. It has even said that it would be inappropriate to have an expert opine as to marketability of title, although it may be an aid to the Court.
Just because marketability is ultimately a question of law, the facts that relate to marketability probably are factual, and you take what the circuit court says about the facts.
Yes, Chief Justice, I would agree 100%. And this Court in Meehan remanded the case so that the trial court could make a determination. This trial court has made no determination. Frankly, I do not believe that issue was really in front of the trial court at that stage.
Thank you.
I have a red light, and so I will sit down. Thank you for your
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honor. The questions have, I think, really focused attention on the Court of Appeals' mistake here, which was to adopt the insurance company's point of view that the encroachment did not encumber and hurt the title to the described land that Mr. Dahlman had insured. That is the issue. We know from, unless Meehan is going to be modified or overturned, although no party has asked for that, we know that the encroachment issue as an encumbrance goes both ways, both off the insured land and onto the insured land. We have a title insurance policy negotiated by knowledgeable people, which specifically allows for damages, indemnity, to Mr. Dahlman for any defect in or lien or encumbrance on the title. By law, we think the encumbrance exists in that it is a substantial building that goes onto the neighbor's land. Now, if there's a question of fact about that, that is something that has yet to be determined. But the fact that it's an encumbrance or can be an encumbrance is shown by the very title policy issued by the plaintiff. The unmarketability of it. Some of the questions by the court have gone to what is the cost or how much of this involves, how unmarketable does it have to be in order to be a defect in title.
Mr. Janicek, I've got a question for you. As I understood Mr. Nielsen's argument, he said there were really two issues here. One was the issue of encroachment. And he didn't really seem to argue that there might not be an encroachment here. He was arguing that there's no coverage here. And when you go back and you look at the definition and the policy of land, the term land does not include any property beyond the lines of the area described or referred to in Schedule A. So how do you respond to his argument that whether there's an encumbrance or not, we didn't cover it?
The title insurance company agreed to insure the title in Block 7 and the east 25 feet of Block 6, and that is the property whose title is impaired by this encumbrance. We're not asking for coverage or any kind of indemnity for the loss of the parking garage. We're saying its very existence on the city of Madison's property is an encroachment which results in an encumbrance on the described land, and that's what we're seeking indemnity for. And the Court of Appeals decision and the trial court's decision have been unsettling because, I blame myself for not getting the point across. We're not claiming that the title company owes us for the land, the garage that we built under the city street. We're saying that that encroachment affects the title to the insured land. And that is what we're seeking compensation for. Not the garage, the effect of the garage on the title that is insured. We don't want coverage on the encroaching structure. We want it on the structure which is insured. I should remind the court, too, that these questions on damages and the correct measure of damages were specifically held in abeyance by the trial court. This was part of our stipulation, so we never got into any of that, and I trust the court understands that. And in closing, I would just point out that Mr. Dahlman's understanding is that the title insurance company represents a risk avoidance industry, a risk avoidance industry. And that is why he negotiated to get the effect of unknown defects accepted as a risk by the insurance company instead of taking it on himself. That's why those deletions were made. Unless the court has further questions, I'll take my seat. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our argument in 2004 AP 2318, First American Title Insurance Company versus Dahlman. We'll take a few moments in recess to enable those who wish to leave the courtroom and allow additional people to come in. We are in a few moments of recess.